All right, this is Gary Parrish again, and this is the Eye on College Basketball Podcast. Again, I'm talking to you now in the morning of January 23rd, which is a Thursday morning, and boy, do I have a treat for you guys this AM. My guest today is our old pal Jeff Goodman. He used to be a writer, you might remember, from here at CBSSports.com. Now he's a television star at ESPN, president of the Anti-Andrew Wiggins Fan Club. Jeff Goodman, how are you this morning?
I'm great. Did you tell everybody our rule? Going into this podcast, we have a few rules. Number one is you are not allowed to actually mention KenPom.
Okay, no
KenPom references.
Easy enough. I can follow that one for sure.
You good with that?
Yeah, I can do that one for sure.
All right, you good with that? And also, what's with the new one-hour podcast, these marathon podcasts? What happened? You got rid of me and you decided, you know, you actually like talking to people?
I think what we found out is that if you put me in charge of something, I'm going to take even more liberty to ramble and ramble and ramble. So next thing, you know, you look up and we're 57 minutes into a podcast.
That does not surprise. At least my job for the last 2 years was to, you know, basically when you were rambling... stop you. I mean, somehow stop you and reel you in. And now Borzello and Nerdlander can't do it. I mean, it's honestly, I zone out after a half an hour. I'm done. I'm fried.
How are we going to get through this, by the way, without having Nerdlander here to pick on?
Honestly, I don't know. I mean, really, he's the guy. He was the punching bag. I mean, now what are we going to do halfway through when we get bored and we just want to rip on him?
I don't know. If we have to get him to join the podcast, maybe like the 25 minutes in because we've run out of stuff, I'll send him a text message or something. Let me ask, do you miss being a writer?
I'm still a writer.
What you do is not a writer. That's not writing.
You know, I got a big story today. I got a feature on Doug McDermott.
Oh, what? You wrote a feature about a white kid?
A National Player of the Year frontrunner.
Get out of here. You wrote a feature on a white basketball player.
It's the. What are you trying to say?
Oh, I don't know. Like, I don't know. You gotta add it to your Robbie Hummel collection.
Listen, those are two. They are two of the best kids I've ever met.
Certainly two of the whitest.
They don't jump very high. Agree. But listen, McDermott's the player of the year right now.
Of course
I think
he is.
There's justification for writing about him and what he's done over his career. But do I miss writing as much? You know what? I miss you.
I miss you.
I do. I miss you. I miss the you know the chemistry we all had together. It was good. And now I've got a new team, new teammates, and you know it's been fun trying to figure this TV thing out and. Trying not to stink on TV.
You know what? And here's the thing. You and I, we talked throughout the whole process of you maybe leaving to go to ESPN. Some people were like, ooh, so Goodman left. Are you and him, you guys not friends anymore? What happened? Nothing happened. You got a great opportunity, and so you accepted it. And I actually encourage you to do it because I thought it was the best thing for your career. Plus, I was a little tired working with you, if you want to know the truth. But when we were talking through it, I don't want to speak out of turn here, but we weren't real sure exactly, you know, what it is you were going to be doing, how often you'd be doing it. I say all that to tell you, every time I turn on the TV, you're on it. They're using you a lot. That's got to be a good sign. I know anytime you try something new, there's these inherent insecurities. So you wonder, am I good enough? Do I look the right way? Am I talking the right way? But the idea that they're using you over there as much as they're using you, I take that as a good sign. Do you take it as a good sign?
Either a good sign or desperation.
But,
you know, to me, listen, it's been much better than I thought in terms of my adjustment to TV. And again, I didn't have the highest expectations because I hadn't done a ton of TV beforehand. It's been fun with all the different roles I've been able to kind of fill and jumping in and doing sideline and sitting down and doing interviews with, you know, Kevin Ware and Brad Stevens and doing some studio stuff and, you know, covering whether it's recruiting, college, some NBA when I can help out. So it has been fun. I mean, again, I kind of came over, like you said, with no role, no specified role, just kind of, you know, do what you do. And it's been a blast, to be honest. Again, I miss you guys a ton. I miss the podcast and being able to rip on you and Norlander. And you got a free Borzello.
Hey, listen, Borzello, I had him on my radio show yesterday. I don't know what happens to him on the podcast. He just, for whatever reason, he doesn't have a whole lot to say. And the most obvious reason would be because I talk over him. But I'm at least aware of it now, and I give him plenty of opportunities, and he just he won't come out of his shell. I'm trying to pull him very slowly out of his shell.
You know who I compare him to? Andrew Wiggins.
I knew we were going to get there. He's a little bit like unreached potential. Jeff Borzello is the Andrew Wiggins of podcast.
No question about it. He can't figure his way out yet. He's inconsistent, sometimes a little passive.
Let's get this out of the way first, because I think this is our biggest disagreement that dates to the preseason and really has not slowed at all. Let's talk about why you hate Andrew Wiggins. In fact, let me ask you exactly that way. Why exactly do you hate Andrew Wiggins? He seems like a pleasant young man. I've been around him. You've been around him. What is it about him that makes you despise him so intensely?
Listen, if I disliked Andrew Wiggins, I would have him far lower than the number three spot I have in my draft order right now. He's a great kid. Not a good kid, a great kid. I just think, again, people, including myself, built him up to be more than he should be. I mean, anybody who put the word LeBron with Wiggins should be probably fired immediately.
What if you put it in this way? Best high school prospect since LeBron. Not that he's going to be LeBron, but if we take all the high school prospects since LeBron, he's the best since then. I think that was actually a reasonable thing to say.
You know what? He looked great at times in high school. When he was in transition, he was, and he still does.
Yes.
He still, when you put that kid in transition, you're like, oh my goodness. His length, his explosiveness, the way he attacks in transition when nobody's in front of him is tremendous. However, if you put him in the half court or put him against his zone, and I'm not sure what it is. I think it's a combination, I've been thinking about it, of a lack of confidence, a lack of assertiveness, and also a lack of, he doesn't have a great handle. He does not, if you watch him in the half court, it's not like he can just put it on the floor and get by guys. He needs a little bit of room, whether it's in transition or even in half court, to be able to turn the corner. So I think there's, and he's not a great shooter. Now again, he's a great talent and a really, really good kid. And again, that's where, you know, people killing me for you know, trying to temper the expectations on Andrew Wiggins. Listen, all I'm saying is this kid is not a dominant player yet. You could make a case that he has not been one of the best 25 players in college basketball so far. You could easily make that case.
I guess, here's what I would say. First off, here's what I would say. Let's start here. How much of the, because Bill Self was interesting after Monday night's game. I was at Allen Fieldhouse, and he was talking about Andrew, and Andrew, he was asked specifically about Andrew. And Andrew, I think in that night, had 17-7, but let me be clear. The quietest 17-7 you've ever seen in your life, right? Like it was all free throws. There was not this is spectacular play. And to your point in the half court, really all he can do in the half court, or at least all he does in the half court, is he can get a one dribble step back jumper, you know, over you. If you put a smaller guy on him, he could shoot over somebody.
Or that spin move. He'll do that one dribble.
That spin move, right. Every once in a while. When he does get into the lane, he doesn't ever try to punch it on people, really. Like, there were three plays, because you know, at Allen Fieldhouse, the media sits right on the baseline, like right underneath the goal. And it's a great place. It's actually my favorite place to sit, because you're court level. You can see the size of everybody. You can appreciate the physicality of the game. I love sitting where we sit at Allen Fieldhouse. But there were about three times where I was sitting where if he would have just tried to punch it on somebody, he'd have probably got at least one of them. Other times he'd have got fouled. Instead, he's laying it up, trying to get a finger roll. I think he actually had one maybe blocked at one point. I don't understand that. And I asked Bill Self about that afterward. He said, I don't know either. You know, like Bill sort of said, listen, it's harder than you think. He was laughing. But he also said, I don't know why he doesn't just try to punch on people every once in a while. All of that said, Bill acknowledged two things. He said, A, yes, he leaves me wanting more. You know, when I watch him do some of the things he does, I don't know why I can't get him to do those things a little more consistently, to try to do those things a little more consistently. So he acknowledged, and we all watch Andrew Wiggins, and we all see the potential for more, so we're all disappointed that we don't get more. But he also said this, and I thought it was interesting. not on, you know, in middle of January last year, everybody was raving about Ben McLemore. Ben McLemore is great. Ben McLemore is an All-American. Ben McLemore is this, that, whatever. And Wiggins and McLemore right now have similar numbers. Wiggins is at 15.6 rebounds. McLemore was 16.5 rebounds. And I think some of the quote disappointment is the expectations. That's all it is. If you didn't know anything about Andrew Wiggins and you were just watching college basketball this year and you went, hey, there's a freshman who is leading a top 10 team in scoring, you'd go, my God, he must be great. But because of the expectations, it's almost he's been labeled a disappointment in this sort of weird, warped way. I guess what I'm saying is I can't remember another example in the history of college basketball of an 18-year-old freshman leading a top 10 team in scoring who has been criticized as much as he has.
Again, it's expectations. Sure. And we did it. And I go back to that game at the Peach Jam a couple years ago in July when he absolutely blasted Julius Randle.
Blasted.
And we all wrote it. I wrote it. I said it. And then you watched him a little bit more. And you talked to NBA guys who came through this past preseason. You talked to Bill Self. You saw it with your own eyes. And you started to get a little bit skeptical of, hey, listen, what does this kid do great now? Now, he can be a great defender. How often, you were there for the two games, how often did you say to yourself, wow, he is getting up in guys and he is absolutely creating havoc on that guy who's trying to score?
He made it difficult for Brady Heslop a little bit in the second half. You know, they'd put a bigger...
He should. Brady can't move.
Right. He should. Brady is my... Brady basically looks like me when I was 20 years old. he should. I get it. But he's still... He has the potential, and he's locked down people. He did it to Jabari in the second half in Chicago. He's done it in certain spots here and there, but has he done it consistently? No, and that's the biggest knock. You know, like he against Iowa State, you know, a week and a half ago, he went for 17 and 19. Then he has a terrible game against Oklahoma State, just disappears completely. Comes back, does 17 and 7. It was quiet, but it was fine. It's just he's a little bit all over the place, and I don't think it's unique to him. Julius has had bad games. Jabari's had bad games. But I think so many eyeballs are on him. And to the point you made, I think that day at Peach Jam where he overwhelmed Julius Randle will ultimately be the worst thing that ever happened to him because it set the bar so high. Because the truth is, you and I, people like us, who are sort of charged with making, you know, forming these opinions about people that become narratives throughout the country, we don't watch Andrew Wiggins 50 times. We see him a handful of times, maybe 10 times in a summer, but that one time we saw him was a time where everybody saw him because everybody was there, and he at that moment, he looked like the best high school prospect since LeBron James. In that summer basketball game at the Peach Jam against Julius Randle's team, he looked like the best thing we'd ever seen, and it was very hard. I admit this. As you start to project who's going to be great in the year 2013-14 college basketball, it was hard to get those images out of my head.
No, it is. I mean, listen, we all kind of remember that day well of what Andrew Wiggins could be. Now, another factor in that is he had Tyler Ennis passing him the basketball.
I think that's big.
Pretty good.
Yes.
You know, I love Nadir Tharp. I've known that kid forever. I love him. He's salt of the earth kid. He's not Tyler Ennis. And Andrew Wiggins needs somebody to get him the ball in transition, get him some easy ones. You know, it's like you watch Creighton, and the first couple plays of the game, what do? They run plays for Doug McDermott. Why? To get him going, to get his confidence up. Not that he needs it anymore. Now, to me, can Bill Self do that for Andrew Wiggins? Because when he's locked in, when he's got that swagger, when he's attacking the basket, yes, he's one of the top five players in college basketball. But unfortunately, it's not consistent. There's too many times when he's just standing around watching, too many times in his zone when, you know, he almost looks like an average IQ player at times because he doesn't know what to do. Now, I know he's a freshman. I understand all that. But I think when he's got that confidence, then he looks like, oh, my goodness, this is the guy we've been talking about. And that, again, to go back to your point, he leaves you wanting more all the time because you see what that potential is and you say, just play hard. Play hard all the time, and even if you're going to make mistakes, we'd rather have you make mistakes playing hard.
I guess you could say, here's where I would bottom line it. You could reasonably say that he is one of the best 10 to 15 to 20 college basketball players in the country. Forget potential, all that stuff. Like this year, you know, regardless of whether he disappears at times or he's still the leading scorer for a team that a lot of people are now picking to win the national championship. So that in and of itself suggests he's good. I think you can take that statement, that paragraph, put it in a box, put it over here, and then also say, but my God, you can't watch him without wishing he would do more and that he would be more, because there's so much room for him to be a better college basketball player. I think those two very different statements can go together and on one hand compliment him for what he actually is, but on the other hand sort of say, but he could be so much more. Is that fair? You'd agree with that, right?
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, there's no doubt that, you know, again, he's tough to figure out. He's tough to figure out, and the expectations hurt him more than anybody. But I just think when you watch the other guys, Julius Randle, Jabari Parker, Aaron Gordon, Tyler Ennis, the one thing you don't question with them is their effort all the time and their motor and how hard they play and how tough they are. With Andrew Wiggins, unfortunately, the more you watch him, sometimes you do question those things.
All right, you mentioned Andrew Wiggins would be third in your mock drafts. If you had to draft tonight, who would be 1-2? Is it Embiid, Parker in some order? Go ahead, give me your top five.
Yeah, I'd go Embiid, Parker 1-2, Wiggins probably 3. Some, you know, Exum, Donnie Exum, the kid from Australia, and Randle at 4 and 5 in some order. Could be Randle 4, Exum 5. I haven't seen enough of Exum other than on tape. Nobody really has. But everything I talked to from the NBA guys, they're intrigued. They haven't seen a ton of them, too, which usually helps a kid like that.
Right. I think the best thing going for him going forward is going to be he's going to be more of a mystery than, say, you know, Julius Randle or Andrew Wiggins or whomever. It's interesting. Now people are starting to wonder, okay, so Joel Embiid might be the number one pick in the draft. Would be, probably, if the draft was taken. It was held tonight. People are starting to wonder whether he'll come back to school. Also, I was on Leadoff last night with our pal Allie LaForce, and they asked me if Jabari Parker would come back to school, because that's sort of a – will you be surprised if these guys are back in school next year?
Shocked.
Yeah, I will too.
Listen, Marcus Smart, that doesn't happen often. I mean, Joakim Noah did it years ago, but, you know, he had plenty of money. He came back with a chance to repeat with a group that came back together. Smart, to me, is kind of an anomaly. I just don't see it. You know, Joel Embiid hails from Cameroon. I don't know his background exactly with his family. My guess is he could use, you know, a couple million dollars.
We could all use a couple million dollars.
Right. So if you're Embiid, don't you go. And if you're Bill Self, don't you tell Joel Embiid, go. Do not come back. I know you may not be completely ready for the league, but how far you've come in such a short period of time, you've got to go. And Jabari Parker, same thing. I mean, listen, when you're a top three pick, it's awfully hard to come back. And I know Jabari Parker's got to get better on defense. And, you know, he went through that funk for the last couple weeks of settling for jumpers, you know, long-range jumpers. But he's still a guy that he's the safest of all the picks. I mean, there's no doubt. If I told you right now, you know, Jabari Parker is going to average 18-8 for his NBA career, and he's going to be a five-time All-Star for whatever team he's playing, would you be surprised?
No. I agree with you. I think Parker is just about the safest, because he's a pro shot maker right now. And I know he's struggled with his shot lately. He's like shooting, I don't know, 28% from three in the past 8 games. But he's still a pro shot maker. I think Marcus Smart's a pretty safe pick. I don't know if he's going to be a 10-time All-Star, but I think he's going to be a good NBA player for a long time. With Wiggins, you could see him being, you know, Rudy Gay instead of Tracy McGrady. And with Embiid, I actually think Embiid's a pretty safe pick too, by the way, you know, at this point. Yeah. I think he looked – but I think if you're drafting for ceiling, you draft a certain way. If you're drafting for safety, Parker seems pretty safe to me.
You know, it depends on the NBA GM.
Yeah.
You know, and his team, of course, and what he's got. But how secure are you as an NBA GM to take the risk to draft Andrew Wiggins? Because it is a risk. I mean, there's no denying that – you don't know what you're going to get at all with Andrew Wiggins at the NBA level. You agree?
I think you're going to get certain things that you can count on. A guy who's tremendous in transition, who can be a really good perimeter defender, and he's got a lot of stuff that's just going to make him a relevant NBA player for a long time. But I do question the killer instinct thing. I do question the disappearing thing. The thing I keep going back to, though, is you know, I was around Derrick Rose a whole lot in his freshman year, and he spent a lot of time blending in. Now, the ball was in his hands a lot, but he spent a lot of time blending in. Chris Douglas Roberts was the star of that team, not Derrick Rose. And then he had this switch, and it just flipped. And when it flipped, when that light came on for him, he was a different dude. He went from quiet, sort of blend in on the court, quiet off the court guy, to a dominant, physically overwhelming, pedal to the ground type of guy, and it just happened. And when it happened, it was game over. I wonder if Andrew Wiggins has a switch to flip. I don't know, but if he does, a lot of people are going to look silly, come March.
Too many people right now are pulling that Paul George comparison for me. You're hearing it all the time. Well, Paul George was this at Fresno, and he was similar to Wiggins and whatnot. Well, but Paul George is the exception to the rule.
Sure.
Most kids, if they're not killers at the age of 17 or 18, they're not going to be killers at 25. It's not – we've seen this enough that either you play hard all the time and you've got that ingrained in you, or you don't. Now, again, there are exceptions, Paul George being one of them, but they're exceptions for a reason.
I think that's fair. I if you were asking me to be honest and tell you, am I skeptical of Andrew Wiggins being, I guess, what it is we thought he could be, 6 months ago? Yeah, I'm more skeptical today than I was 6 months ago. There's no denying that, but I still think that If we would have had podcasts, in the year 2008, like the way we do now, and Twitter in 2008, the way we do now, you could go back and pull tweets and podcasts about Derrick Rose that would have made you wonder if he's ever going to be able to be great in the NBA. And in hindsight, by the time we got to the NCAA tournament, they would have looked silly. I wonder if that's going to be the case with Wiggins, but I see a lot of the same stuff that his critics see. Let me ask you this: you got a piece going up later today at ESPN.com on Doug McDermott. We joked about it earlier. Let me ask, when you talk to NBA scouts, what do they tell you about McDermott at the next level?
I think everybody knows what McDermott's going to be at the next level. He's going to be a good piece. He can shoot the ball. He's a great team guy. He's better than people think about putting it on the floor and getting by people. That's the one thing you watch right now against length and athleticism in the new Big East. And he's been able to get by guys. I saw it in Providence, and he was terrible in Providence, to be honest. He did not feel well. He still ended up with 21-7. And he didn't move well without the ball. You could tell he was not feeling well. But, then you look at Villanova, and he and Ethan Rogge torch Villanova. Absolutely torch him. So I think McDermott's going to be, again, you got to get him on the right team, but why can't he be a guy, if you surround him with really, really good players and athletic players, why can't he be a guy that takes advantage, makes shots, and he's got a pretty good feel for the game. I mean, his passing's gotten much better. He doesn't take bad shots. High IQ game. So I think he could be a good player, a 12-point-a-game guy in the NBA.
I think he can be too. And how much of it is when people look at him, he's stereotyped because of the color of his skin? Do you think that's a factor at all? I think sometimes people look at him and they go, well, I don't know if he can do this, that. But he's a 6'8 scorer. Like, if you're a 6'8 scorer, people don't usually doubt you. But for whatever reason, and I think maybe race might be part of it, for whatever reason, at the NBA level, people are skeptical of Doug McDermott. I'm not at all. I don't know if he's going to be an all-star, but I think he's going to be really good.
Well, listen, let's compare him just college-wise to Jabari Parker, okay? Just college-wise. He shoots it much better. We know that. Now, Parker's a better athlete, all that, but he shoots it better. He scores in the post better. He defends better. He passes it better right now. Like, what does Jabari Parker have over him today? He has upside. He has upside, he has athletic ability, but Doug McDermott is a much better player today. Overall, shooting, scoring in the post, he's got an array of moves. Again, he's not a great athlete, and that's what will hurt him at the end of the day. Whether you're black or white, it doesn't matter. If you're not athletic, it's going to hurt you with the NBA guys.
When you watch Kentucky, do you see a Final Four team?
No, because of Andrew Harrison. Everything else, yes. every other part of Kentucky screams to me Final Four team. You know, they've got a stud, tough kid in Julius Randle. They've got a defensive presence with Willie Cauley-Stein, a good backup center now with Dakari Johnson. You've got a couple wings that aren't ultra consistent in James Young and Aaron Harrison, but you know what? They kind of take turns scoring the basketball. But what you don't have is a point guard you can trust right now. You don't have a point guard that makes things easier for anybody else out there. Andrew Harrison's not a good shooter. He's not a great athlete. I mean, talk about a guy who's overrated. Actually, I really didn't overrate him. I did not love the Harrisons coming out of AAU in high school. I think physically they were able to overpower people, especially Andrew. Aaron, again, I think Aaron is a pro two guard. I'm not sure Andrew – I wouldn't take Andrew right now in the first round.
How much of it is this? I had a coach ask me this question, and I thought it was pretty smart. He said, listen, why does everybody think Andrew Harrison's a point guard? The truth is they were twin brothers who were both really good basketball players, and they played together their whole lives, and one of them was the two guard, and the other one was the point guard, but they're really both two guards. Do you buy that?
But Aaron can shoot it.
Right.
That's the difference. Right. Andrew can't shoot it maybe because he's been forced to play the point, where you're right, naturally he's probably got better – two guard skills at the end of the day, but was forced to play a position because of his brother. You know, I just think Kentucky, it's all about, you know that. You know it better than anybody. For Calipari, it's all about the point guard.
Sure.
And usually, the point guard, the second half of the year, even if he struggles the first half, a la Tyreek Evans, Marcus Teague, Brandon Knight, Derrick Rose, you can go through the list, almost everyone other than John Wall have struggled out of the gates the first half of the year. Well, we're about 18 games in now. And to me, Andrew Harrison's a little bit better, but has he shown major improvements in any of those aspects of his game that I mentioned? And we didn't even mention defensively.
No, I mean, I watched him the other night on television against Texas A&M, and he looks like somebody who can physically overwhelm you with the dribble. But is he really running your team? I don't see any moment or very few moments do I watch them and I go, Andrew Harrison is really running this team right now. Now, maybe you can get by without that. Like, I don't know how much Tyreek ran that Memphis team as much as he just physically overwhelmed other people. But Tyreek didn't have the cast of characters around him that Andrew Harrison has. And I'm with you on this one. If Kentucky doesn't reach its potential, it'll be, you don't want to pin it on one kid, but it's a little more complicated than that.
Yes.
But that point guard position is the problem. They've got a good prospect there, but I don't think they got a good college point guard there right now.
You know, to me, look down the line of the teams that have won it all and find me one without a pretty good point guard. Mm-hmm. I mean, Peyton Siva last year, you know, again, he had a ceiling for his pro potential, but Peyton Siva was a leader. He made people better. He guarded. He did Kemba a few years ago, obviously took that UConn team on his back. Even Marcus Teague, again, he got a lot better. You know, he was a legitimate first-round pick. You know, you just talk about all the guys, you know, Sharon Collins and Mario Chalmers. You don't win without a high-level point guard, especially with a very, very young team. And all these guys are trying to kind of feel their way. And life isn't much easier when you don't have a guy that's giving you easy baskets.
Is that the issue for Kansas as well? Are they good enough at point to win a national title?
I mean, I question that. I absolutely now the one X factor with Kansas to me is Joel Embiid.
Right.
He makes life easy from the center position because of all the attention he gets, you know, the double and even triple teams to some degree. When he puts the ball on the floor, watch. Everybody's coming back. You know, at least one guy's coming back to help there. Which opens it up, and Embiid's a good passer. And then on the defensive end, it's funny. Bill Self told me before the start of the season that Embiid was not the shot blocker that Jeff Withey is, and he's not the same in how he does it, but, man, he's having a similar impact right now in terms of the way he alters, block shots, how tough he is. So Joel Embiid, again, yeah, Nadir Tharp is not the highest-level point guard, and neither is Frank Mason. If you could put them two, you know, the two of them together, they'd be a really good point guard. So I question it with Kansas, but I think Kansas, to me, if you're asking me which team today I would pick to win it all out of those two, I'd take Kansas ahead of Kentucky.
I think I would take Kansas ahead of Kentucky, too. After just watching them for two straight games, you know, from the baseline, I love the potential there. I don't know that Nader is. I think Frank Mason like is a better point guard for that team, but I don't know if he's as good as Nader is right now. So it's
he can't shoot.
He can't
Mason's
shoot.
Not a great shooter.
But Mason will get in there and drive it on you. You know, yeah. He'll try to go get it.
He'll
guard. He'll guard you. Like he does more of the things that I like to see a point guard do, but he can't shoot it like Nader can. I mean, Nader's been shooting it really well with Embiid. The Wooden midseason list was released yesterday. The 25 names are on it, and Embiid was not on it. What I tried to explain to people on Twitter is, are you still a voter with that?
I am.
Okay, yeah. Like, our ballots were due January 10th, right? And so our ballots were due nearly 2 weeks ago. And the list, you know, so I tried to explain to people that 2 weeks ago, you could have reasonably left Embiid off of the list. 2 weeks ago, you could have.
4 games ago.
Yeah. Like, it's funny. Like, it would be like, If you had to turn in a top 25 ballot, but they weren't going to release it for 2 weeks, it would probably look pretty silly 2 weeks later. I think this is the exact same thing. Let me ask you this. I got to do a Player of the Year update today. Should Embiid be in the top 10?
Absolutely. No question. Again, overall impact.
Yeah.
You know, that's what you got to look at. Too many people look at just the numbers. Say, well, he's only averaging, you know, 11 and 7 and three blocks. Yeah, but don't look just at the numbers. Don't be a numbers dork, Parrish.
No. Who are you talking to? Orlando's not here.
Don't go that way. I know. Ken Palm's trying to bring you along and nerd along, and I'm trying to keep you. I'm trying to keep you with the common folk.
No, I think you're right. I think a total impact, particularly with the way he's playing right now. I think Embiid can reasonably place in the top 10. I will have him. In the top 10. Last thing before I let you go. Last night I sat around and watched Minnesota get another nice win, this time over Wisconsin, despite the fact that they lost to Andre Hollins in the first minute of the game. You and I have both known Richard Pitino for forever, and this has been a big jump for him. I never doubted whether Richard could be a successful Division I head coach someday. I was skeptical on some level that he would have success immediately because he is walking into a monster of a league. Suddenly you find yourself, you know, at the age of 31, 32, whatever he is, coaching against Bo Ryan, coaching against Thad Matta, Tom Crean, Tom Izzo, so on and so forth. Are you surprised at the success Richard has had so quickly at Minnesota?
A little bit. I mean, I think he's a really good coach.
I do too.
And I've always said that. But he's so young that you just wondered whether he was ready for something like this, you know? You're 1 year, 1 year at FIU, and then you get the Minnesota job, which, by the way, is not an easy job.
No.
So, what do you, you know, to me, and you're not inheriting a lot from Tubby. You know, you're overmatched against most teams. So, you're writing them off for the most part, and then they're missing out on some recruits in state. And it's not his fault because he's got so much ground to try to make up from the Tubby regime that it's going to be really difficult for him. But so you start to wonder, hey, listen, if he doesn't get players, he doesn't have enough players. This was huge for him because I think recruits need to see that he can coach, that they can have some success. You know, he's talked to me about the crowd and the fan base and how crazy it is. And, you know, to me, you can get it going there. And I think, you know, Norwood Teague, their AD, give him a lot of credit. He's the same guy who hired Shaka. And now he goes young again with a guy who's kind of unproven. And he hires Richard Pitino. And I'm not sure how long they'll have him. I mean, honestly, like, what if Rick, you know, Richard does a good job. Rick retires in 3 years. And if Richard gets him to the tournament once, doesn't he go to Louisville?
Oh, yeah. Listen, I think he's going to probably have the opportunity to if he can keep this going. Like, he's going to go to the tournament once probably this year. Like, they're, you know, in that league, I guess it could slip on you at any point. I mean, we've seen it happen with Ohio State and Wisconsin, I guess. But he's doing a hell of a job. Like, he's doing a real – like, I've got him in the top 25 and one today. They, you know, if they don't lose this weekend, I haven't even looked at their schedule, but they should be in the AP top 25, you know, next week. He's doing tremendous – And then, if Louisville calls, you leave Minnesota, you go to Louisville. That make, you know, nobody would turn that down, particularly if your last name is Pitino. But, you know, if you're a Minnesota fan, I don't think you can spend your days worrying about that. Just sort of enjoy what you've got going right now. And, you know, though Tubby did a nice job there, you've got some young, exciting you know, coaching prospect there now. And it seems to, like I saw, you know, I got an HD television. I saw the crowd last night. They look tremendous. It looked like they're having a fun time in Minnesota, you know?
Yeah, no, I think they got to be happy to have him again and get kind of a young, you know, young guy who's going to fight. And, you know, Tubby's a high character guy, but again, he hadn't recruited at the highest level. And you could see, you know, that program certainly falling off. They hadn't yet, but you could see that that's kind of the direction it was headed. And that's why Norwood Teague made the decision he did.
All right, well, listen, we've taken enough of your time. I think we can't keep television stars on the podcast for an hour, hour and a half. So thank you, Jeff Goodman, for being here this morning. Let me tell the rest of you guys, thanks for listening, for following both of us on Twitter, for listening to us on the podcast, for reading what we write, even if it happens to be placed behind a paywall every once in a while. Remember, you can subscribe to the Ion College Basketball Podcast over at iTunes. It's the quickest way to make sure you get the latest episodes. So go ahead and do that. And I'll talk to you again really, really soon. Take care. Latest ups. My God, what was that?
My dog.